Today on Season 3, Episode 74 of the Unknown Packers Podcast, Ken returns to the UPP studio and the Pack march on. It wasn't pretty, but the Packers came out of the weekend with another victory. The defense stepped up, the offense sputtered, streaks were broken, Rodgers added yet another bullet point to his MVP resume. The fellas hand out game balls, answer listener questions, and fill in the blank. With the one seed in sight, the Packers prepare for the toughest matchup in the fourth quarter. Do we have concerns? Listen in and find out. And now it's time for 11-3 on tap.
This is Green Bay. Green Bay.
Thank you so much for following the Unknown Packers podcast.
Touchdown! Dagger! Al Harris, 56 yards to a game-winning touchdown! Green Bay Packers!
Go, Pat, go!
Running isn't everything, but it's the only thing.
Green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow.
Packers podcast.
Green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow. Green
and let me tell you this, Green Bay is a great town.
This is Green Bay, Green Bay, Green Bay.
And welcome to the Unknown Packers podcast for 11-3 on tap. Packers win 24-16 over the Panthers to improve to 11-3 on the season. But I will admit, it was a little concerning effort for the Packers, which looked like they were going to blow out Carolina in the first half, and then they just stalled in the second half. We're going to talk about overall vibes, game balls, fan questions, maybe a fill-in-the-blank question, and then wrap up with our next opponent, the Tennessee Titans. But I am not peacocking. I am not flying solo. I've got my brother from another mother, Big Bad Ken Ingles, in the building. How are you doing, Ken, after this Packers win?
Doing well, Bryce. Doing well. Did you miss me?
I, of course, missed you. You asked me in pre-production. Of course I missed you.
All right, Just checking
and that's
in.
That's the answer
sure.
I've got to give, too.
Making sure I'm needed and loved. But no, man, 11-3, keeping pace for the number one seed, putting some pressure on the Saints to, you know, in their face-off against the Chiefs.
Right.
Not a pretty win, but hell, I'll take it. They all count the same in the end.
I've got the same mindset too. Win's a win. And I mean, first and foremost, we're going to do a sandwich approach to this first half. We're going to talk about the good. We're going to talk about the bad. And then we'll wrap up with some game balls that we'll be giving out. But overall, I personally went into this game thinking that Carolina is an ascending team under head coach Matt Rhule. I like what they've done. They've never really been blown out. They went toe-to-toe with Kansas City, losing by two. They've struggled finishing games. And this is a team that's not going to give up. So I thought overall it was a good effort. I think what's perplexing is just, again, those lulls at the end of the first half, in the beginning of the second half. This game could have been so much different had Teddy Bridgewater not fumbled with KB punching that out and Kevin King recovering that. I count my lucky stars that occurred, because if not, we're looking at a totally different game. We'll talk about that specific play. But overall, I mean, Packers are 11-3. There might be some people tuning in like, Bryce is being a Pollyanna again, looking at the glass half full. I think that Carolina's got nothing to lose. They want nothing better than to play spoiler. And the Packers have everything to lose. And you get out of there with a win. The offense has carried this team so far this season. It was really nice for the special teams and the defense to step up. Regardless, Carolina was without Christian McCaffrey. So that's another blessing. I really wonder, without that fumble, and again, Shannon Sullivan was able to create a fumble with Teddy Bridgewater again. That red zone defense was impressive. I think it was, one out of five red zone tries that the Packers were able to defend against the Carolina Panthers. But if Christian McCaffrey's in here, I think it's a totally different story. I think we got lucky. I think you pull away, you get a victory, and then you go back to the drawing board and see what you can do moving forward.
Well, I think you nailed it, right? This team is an ascending team. How many games have they lost now by one score? This would be another. 24-6 or 7. Yeah, they're 4-10 now. You know, the ball goes bounces a different way a few more times. You know, this could be a really competitive team. And then you add in the fact that, you mentioned Christian McCaffrey signed to that mega deal. he basically is the offense, and the offense runs through him. Being off the field is a huge, it's a huge detriment to the team. And yeah, they were lucky to come off with, you know, with a win, but it's like I said, you can only play the opponents that you have in front of you at the time, injuries being part of it, and lucky to scoot away with a win. But man, this game started off. I know we're kind of doom and gloom right now, or sound a little gloomy about it, but this game started off great. You know, I put out a tweet about, like, what, a few minutes into the second second quarter, saying, okay, this is going to look like a Tim Boyle full fourth quarter game. And I took that one away as we enter the fourth quarter, like, ooh, not so much.
Yeah, right. I mean, there are definitely some silver linings. I'm always looking at the silver linings.
Oh, yeah.
And you look at, in an MVP caliber season for Aaron Rodgers, he got his 400th career touchdown a couple weeks ago. He also eclipsed or got to 40 touchdowns in this game. He had reached that back in 2011 and 2016. Rodgers became the first player in NFL history with three seasons of 40 plus touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty remarkable to have 40 touchdowns already. You've got two games left to play. I think, yes, he didn't have his best performance, and he even said, quote, tonight we had a couple good quarters and a couple stinkers. That's just not consistent winning football. He followed that up with, it's a little bittersweet tonight. As fun as the first couple quarters were, it's not going to be an easiest night of sleep thinking about that in the second half. I think another takeaway from this is getting sort of punched in the mouth and being able to survive a comeback from the Carolina Panthers, a really well-coached team, a team that's still coming together, very young on the defensive side of the ball. They still probably need to look at a quarterback, but without Christian McCaffrey, I feel okay. And I think getting this type of win, this ugly win, bittersweet feeling, I think that's going to bode well moving forward for them. This had the feeling of like a trap game, but at the same time, I feel like how the offense started, they did just enough in order to stretch that. The defense came away with some key one, that key takeaway from Teddy Bridgewater. And then also those red zone stops. Some great defensive play by one player and another player specifically. Are you feeling ready for the game balls, or we still want to talk overall vibes?
Let's talk some game balls, man. Go for it.
Well, I think first and foremost, I mean, this is, I want to say this might be the first time that we're giving game balls to two defensive players, but
Spoiler alert.
Thought about Aaron Jones, who had 20 carries for 145 yards and a touchdown. It was great to see Robert Tonyan with his 10th touchdown, or tug, if you will, as Davante Adams likes to call it. And granted, Davante Adams, his consecutive touchdown streak ended. Rodgers got to 40 touchdowns. There's a lot to take away from this that I thought was positive. First and foremost, I thought Adrian Amos's play, you hit it right on the head when we were going back and forth with game balls. This is a consensus pick. And Adrian Amos had just a gaudy stat line. But I think one of the key plays was that red zone stop, where he was able to get that pass breakup intended for Robbie Anderson. Anything that you felt with Famous Amos, and why right off the bat you thought that he should get a game ball?
Man, I just saw him everywhere. And I think what really stood out to me at first was the last defensive possession, or the drive, I should say, where it was, there was a sandwich, right, of three straight pass breakups. It was Amos breaking up a pass, and then Sullivan come up, and then right back on third down, Amos again breaking up the play. You know, that was an opportunity for Carolina to, you know, at the end of the half, maybe drive down, put up some more points, and just stopping it dead in its tracks. And then the very following drive, first defensive drive of the second half, just blows up Teddy Bridgewater in the open field. I think they technically credited him with a sack on that, but it's just a great open field tackle, making sure, stopping right in his tracks. You know, seven tackles, six solo, and those three pass defense. Obviously, you mentioned the one in the end zone.
Yeah.
That's game tilting. You know, if that's a touchdown, completely different ball game. And the way the offense was going at the time, just great to see Amos stepping up and showing up, ascending, I think, week after week, and showing up in December when the games matter the most.
You hit it on the head again. I couldn't agree more. He just seems to be always around the ball, swarming. He's intelligent. I don't know if we're giving Brian Gutekunst enough credit for that those big four acquisitions last year with the Smith brothers, Amos and Billy Turner, that completely transformed this team and instilled a culture. I mean, we had HaHa Clinton Dix back there that we had essentially swapped for Adrian Amos. There was a lot of talk about when we acquired Adrian Amos that he wasn't going to do anything bad. He was going to do things just well. You weren't going to hear his name that often, which was a good thing because he was taking care of his responsibilities, his tasks at hand. But like you said, he's a tilter. I mean, the seven tackles, the sack, the QB hit, the three pass breakups, that's a gaudy, gaudy stat line. And that those are Pro Bowl. I mean, say what you will with Pro Bowl votes, what have you. I know we talked about Savage a lot in the last couple weeks with his play, but Adrian Amos, the last few weeks, he just seems to be a little bit more powerful, a little bit more swarming to the football, and more decisive. He is influencing the game. He had a lot to say in the post game where he was talking about that we're just getting going on defense. So you have this hiccup on offense, and if this is continuing in the right direction, you're looking at right now the Green Bay Packers are a top 10 defense in total defense.
That's crazy.
They struggled in the red zone. I want to say they were the worst team in red zone efficiency, giving up. I think there's only that fumble recovery by Kevin King was the only time that the Packers had stopped a team in the red zone. They had given up scoring on all of those drives. So those are confidence boost types of plays that I think bode well for Amos as well as the defense. The other type of big play was Chris Barnes. And Coach LaFleur said that this was the play of the game, no doubt about it, with Barnes' punch out when Bridgewater tried to sneak in and reach over the goal line. Had the Panthers scored there, the Packers would then have been just leading 14-10. Instead, Kevin King returned a fumble for 48 yards. The Packers scored their third straight touchdown 7 plays later to take a 21-3 advantage. So I think without Christian McCaffrey, without that play by Chris Barnes, we're looking at a totally different outcome and possibly talking about a loss. So like you said at the start of the episode, a win's a win. And take away from this, you've got some things that you can learn on tape, but you also had some really impressive play with Adrian Amos with the first game ball. And now with the second game ball and Chris Barnes, we talked about the snap counts, or that was one of my pondering questions that I had tweeted out right before kickoff, was who's going to lead in snap counts. It sure seemed like Chris Barnes, who was the commander, who's the communicator on field, using the headset over Kirksey, having that huge punch out. On top of that, he finished with 6 tackles. He did leave the second half with an eye injury, but we'll see how that plays out. But being that Mike linebacker, and he also has that take no prisoners approach, he's that type of guy that lets everyone know that he's in the building. I am super thrilled about this undrafted free agent out of UCLA. Talk about a huge find for Gutekunst and possibly our future middle inside linebackers, what we're seeing right now. Anything that you want to add for Chris Barnes with the second game ball? Because again, these were your two proposals and I couldn't agree more with them.
Yeah, man. 6 tackles, all of them solo, 1 for a loss. Obviously that key force fumble at the goal line. Man, this could have been a completely different game. So imagine Bridgewater makes it in there. And then if you remember in the second half, Bridgewater had that 13-yard run. And then he almost had another touchdown on the following drive. But again, that Sullivan punched it out. It got recovered in the end zone, but there was a holding penalty. This could have been a Bridgewater coming out game, you know, with 3 rushing touchdowns. But enter Chris Barnes to shut down that right away. So not only does that play where he just knocks it out with Bridgewater trying to leap the pile at the goal line, but again, that first defensive drive coming out of halftime, he was involved on 3 of those tackles, one of them just blowing up a huge screen for -6 yards. Like, he completely knew what the play was, all surrounding, swarming to the ball. The guy's fast. That closing speed, like when he knows, you know, see ball, get ball type of mentality. And he went out, I think that was his last drive on the field. I believe was the first drive on defense in the second half. And, you know, putting up big numbers, affecting change on the field, in basically playing a half and one extra drive Could have been a much more gaudy of a night, but hopefully he's doing well. You know, I saw something, maybe he'll be rocking an eye patch next week. Hope it doesn't have to go that far. Just some time off will help heal that up. But yeah, two game balls going on the defensive side this week. But I, you know, you look at this defense overall, 16 points. I'll take it. If you have Aaron Rodgers playing the type of football that Aaron Rodgers can play, and you have a defense that gives up less than 20 points on average, that's a recipe for success. And I will absolutely take that each and every week.
I love it. And I think that, yeah, that's another silver lining. That's another takeaway. I think that there's definitely some concerns, especially when, you know, the Green Bay Packers punted on five consecutive possessions and failed to score on either half of a potential double up. I love those double up opportunities to end the second quarter and start the third quarter, gaining only 49 yards in the second half, failing to run out the final 2 minutes plus, but holding on for a 24-16 victory. That defense is bending in the right way. You needed, and again, in December football, you've got a scrappy team like the Panthers that you have a very energetic coach who brings in a lot of different schemes and layouts that even Rodgers had commented on that he said that he had never seen before. A lot of safety and linebacker and cornerback combinations that he had never really seen before that obviously Rule had brought in from Baylor. So like you had mentioned, also Jason Perrone, who is a host of Quick Slants, a friend of ours, he had tweeted out that this was a good win for the Packers because you have an ascending Carolina Panthers team that's galvanized, that wants to play for their coach without their star player. They gave it their all, and I thought that the Packers coming away with a victory, I'm gonna take that. And I think now you have a bunch of information on film that you can go back and review. Rodgers, as well as numerous players, have said that even in their best performances, the coaches are always nitpicking and looking at how to get better, looking at how to evolve. And I think this type of game, they have a lot under the microscope that I think is going to bode well for them moving forward with the Tennessee Titans and the Bears. They still sit atop of the NFC with the number one seed, and they're in the driver's seat. I think, again, it was nice to see that there were fans at Lambeau Field, 250 fans honoring the frontline workers. So healthcare and public safety workers and their immediate households were invited. That included like Bellin Health, Green Bay Police Department, Ashwaubenon Public Safety, Brown County Sheriff's Office, and then the Green Bay Metro Fire Department, all of which work with the Packers on game days. And you're going to see about 300 employees or 300 that attended the Bears game. You had 500 for the Eagles. And then they expected about 700-800 for Saturday. So it was nice for fans to experience what a special season this is. Have these hiccups now. Have these hiccups now. Come away with a victory. Playing bad in the second half and still coming away with a victory, I'll take that. Granted, I think Carolina also did everything that they could to try to win the game, but at the same time, the defense bending in the right way, and you have legitimate playmakers and stars on both sides of the football. Give credit to Carolina for icing out, neutralizing Devontae Adams, and LaFleur and Rodgers recognizing the fact that they needed to get the ball to him more, but they had a game plan. They came equipped, and so got to give credit where credit is due. Kudos to the Carolina Panthers for that valiant effort.
Right, right. Yeah, you talk about a game plan. As the game went on, I started thinking, it's like, wow, it's like the defense knows what's going to happen, what Aaron Rodgers wants to do before he does it. I look at the last two drives of the game where, you know, there were back-to-back passes to Adams that were just completely blown up and sniffed out right away. And then on the final drive, you know, Rodgers was, he did that bootleg on third down trying to run out the clock, and Brian Burns knew exactly what that play was. In fact, I saw on Twitter before the play went off, like, hey, this is typically when we do that bootleg to Tonyan, right? And then, lo and behold, you know, game comes on, and that's exactly what happened. Seemed like the defense knew exactly where Rodgers was going to be and just got hit immediately. But, you know, I also take a step back. They scored 24 points, and I know it's fun and shiny when we put up 30-plus, 40-plus points on these teams, but it's number one scoring offense in the league, and taking 24 isn't a bad thing. Right. It's just the nature in which it came, right?
Yep.
So you go Tonyan touchdown, Rodgers rushing touchdown, Jones rushing touchdown, and then punt, three and out, punt, mm-hmm. field goal, three and out, which leaves a sour taste in your mouth. But when you step back and you kind of look at, you know, almost the box score effect, which I tend to try and avoid, but at the end of the day, 24 points on offense, 16 for the defense, most teams will gladly take that. I know we're not most teams, and you can't always put 30 plus up every week in and week out, even though that's what they're averaging.
Right.
Sometimes these stinkers kind of come in there. And what I'm more happy about is the mindset. You know, they won and they were pissed. You heard, you saw it right away.
Right.
Rodgers in his post game was not very happy, not a lot of congratulating himself or, you know, a lot of the offense, right? And you contrast that to the Colts game. They lost that game. And I remember watching the post game and they're like, oh yeah, no big deal. On to the next. These good things point. Happen. And
good point.
So I'd much rather have it this way where they won, it was ugly, they knew it, and they know that they need to do better, because if that type of stuff happens to a better opponent, it might not come out the same way.
Ooh, what poetry from Ken Engels, and I couldn't have said it better myself. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we've got fan questions, fill in the blank, and then we look at our Tennessee Titans. We'll be right back. Go Pack, go.
This episode is brought to you by Sonic Transformation. Check us out at www.sonictransformation.com. Sonic Transformation, your sound refined.
Go Pack, go! And we are back with the second half of 11-3 on tap. I hope you enjoyed the first half of our episode with myself and Ken Engels. And now we pivot. Fan questions. We have three, but we've got three questions consolidated into one because it was the same genre, if you will. But first off, from at Free Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T, what is it with this offensive line being so good in the first half and so bad in the second half? It cost them the game in Indianapolis and almost cost them a win last night. Also to add to that, at Quano Mike and at Meno underscore fire, who is Super Club All Stars. I think that's an awesome Twitter handle. Those three all consolidated into one. So pretty much what happened to this offensive line, this offense alignment? Is this a recipe for success or a recipe for disaster moving forward? I am going to deflect to you, Ken, and I might piggyback off you.
All right.
On what you follow up with.
So the question, you know, what is it with the offense being so good and then kind of fading away? I was thinking about this because this isn't a one-time thing. And we've kind of talked about this a few times week in and week out where you'll see these gaudy numbers pull up and then kind of fade away, or coming out of a bye week. Packers aren't necessarily doing so hot, or they come off slow, or they tend to lose games. I don't know. I think it's more maybe about a culture thing. Maybe they're getting too comfortable.
Interesting.
I don't know if there's just not that killer instinct to, you know, want to put a team away and, you know, all gas, no effing break. You know, ever since LaFleur said that on the sidelines and it became a meme, it became a soundbite across the league.
Lifestyle.
Right. And t-shirts were made. We really haven't seen a lot of that. Where they get up and they just keep going, right? And they just, you know, pedal to the floor. And there's got to be something. Credit to LaFleur and this coaching staff and this team for instilling a culture that was desperately needed, a change in culture that was desperately needed from, you know, where things are at in the McCarthy era. Players are having a lot more fun. But, okay, that's great when you're doing well and you're winning and you're blown out opponents and, you know, you've got the gold zone instead of the red zone. But mm-hmm. when things aren't necessarily going well and you're doing three and out after three and out and three and out and not pivoting into, hey guys, you know, maybe you hadn't noticed, but we're not doing so well. We need to step it up here. That seems to be lacking, and I don't know what the cause of that is. Do you have any ideas, Bryce?
I wonder if the injury to Corey Linsley is a lot more significant than we're letting on.
Really? Okay.
So Elgton Jenkins does look, I mean, he's a natural center coming out of Mississippi State, second rounder from last year. I think he's the future. Another question that was also consolidated into this at Dave Jr. 1000, talking about Lucas Patrick being more of a natural at center rather than guard. The thought crossed my mind yesterday where I just saw that the Panthers' defensive line was just imposing this power. Bakhtiari looked like he was having a real rough time sort of trying to wrangle Brian Burns. Rodgers looked flustered. This offense looked flustered after the second half. So give credit to the Panthers for making adjustments. I mean, they're down 21-3. They could have easily just waved that white flag. Rather, they decide to just put their, you know, the hands in the ground and decide not to give up. The thought crossed my mind was Corey Linsley was arguably the best center in the NFL before he went down with an injury. And him being a free agent next year, I start to wonder if that injury is a lot more significant. They've had to do a lot of reshuffling where it's worked well. But when you have your all-pro left tackle who just got paid struggle against a second-year ascending player like Brian Burns, I think that just influences the whole offensive line. And two, I do think that we minimized the significance of Corey Linsley's injury because we were able to plug in uber savant, all-talented Elgton Jenkins, who is still learning the nuances at center at the pro level. Granted, he's a Swiss Army knife and he can be placed all over that line, but where does he excel in? I think that tandem of Linsley, Jenkins, and Bakhtiari was incredible. And I wonder with Linsley going down, you reshuffle, you sort of patch it up and you do okay, but it wasn't to that level that it has been before.
Right.
So my answer is I think that we're seeing the ramifications of a Corey Linsley injury.
Right. And not just Corey Linsley. You forget that Lane Taylor.
Yep.
He was the starter. He only lasted a game, but he was starting in there at right guard and Billy Turner was at right tackle.
Yep.
And so, you know, cards on the table, their best five aren't all playing right now.
Right.
They've got two long-term replacements in, right? And then, hats off, in the past, the offensive line has been performing very well, but they've been tweaking things. They've been changing things around. Quano Mike specifically talks about, we had it for a while where it was Bakhtiari, then John Runyon in there at left guard.
Right.
And Jenkins filling it at center, and we had Patrick, the numbers got confused in my brain there. Lucas Patrick on the right side at guard, and Billy Turner sticking around at tackle, and that was working for a bit. Now I think this is the second, or maybe is it the third game? Second, where they've taken Runyon out of that starting lineup, and they've got Ricky Wagner filling in at right tackle and kind of shifting everyone over to the left a little bit. You know, coaches must have seen something that they like better in that arrangement. Maybe it's something more versatile in case there is an injury, cross-training. I don't know. But that seemed to kind of catch everyone off guard, a lot of the fan base, because there's been three games now where Runyon had to kind of come in and play savior mid-game and did well. And so I guess everyone just assumed with a full week of preparation, he would just be the guy. And so there's something going on in terms of, you know, the coaching decisions to why that is, but who knows what they'll do going forward.
Like I mentioned in the first half, I think they've got a lot of information on tape that they're going to reflect and rewind. I like the humble approach that the team has. They're always looking at trying to get better. That's the culture. That's the swagger, the lifestyle, the essence, as Rodgers says. But for me, I think it's Linsley. That's not to say that Elgton Jenkins is not as on par with Linsley at the center position, but I just do wonder the switch up. He didn't do anything bad, but I just notice that alignment. I wonder what the coaches have seen in practice to make that decision. Keep in mind, John Runyon is a 6th-round draft pick from this past draft. They're trying to ease him in. Coach LaFleur in post-game pressers has always answered questions where he'll be asked about a player and why isn't he seeing more on the field or why hasn't he been on the field? And Coach LaFleur's always usually responded to it with, it's been unveiled in practice. So I'm wondering if he's doing things in practice, running specifically, where LaFleur and company look at it and go, okay, maybe he's just, he can come in and step in when we need to, but if we want him to start, he's not there yet. I don't know if that's the answer. We're going to wait and find out. But you've got the Titans, you've got the Bears coming up, and then you've got some teams in the NFC that are going to decimate you in the trenches. The Rams, I think, the Saints. So this is an area that I'd like for them to shore up. But given five sacks up to Rodgers, a very young defensive line with the Carolina Panthers and a very experienced offensive line with the Packers, it was surprising to see Bakhtiari struggle against Brian Burns. Maybe Burns is already at that elite level in his second year. I just felt like Bakhtiari was a little flat-footed. He wasn't as agile as he's used to being. So I'll have to go back and check that out just to see what got him all caught up off guard. But then again, give credit to Coach Rhule. He implements a defense that Rodgers has said that he's never really seen before. So maybe the offensive line is a little jumpy. Maybe Rodgers is a little jumpy. He's seeing ghosts out there. I'm not really sure. I'm excited to go back and check the D-line and O-line. But that was definitely one of my questions, my ponderings, if you will, before the game was, how was this D-line, offensive line going to shake up for both sides of the football? But anything that you wanted to add to the offensive line specifically before we answer our next fan question?
I guess the last bit that we didn't touch on specifically, I know there was a whole handful of questions that we kind of lumped together with the offensive line and the struggles, was from David James specifically of kind of the Lucas Patrick talk versus Jenkins at center and who should be playing there and, you know, maybe even next year. What are your thoughts?
I like Lucas Patrick a lot, and I think Rodgers has a lot of respect for him. Mm-hmm. He's definitely been a grinder. He's worked really, really hard. I think, again, that draft capital, it makes sense with Jenkins, where he was a natural at center at Mississippi State, an elite center. And so when Lindsey goes down, I think that's the move you can make.
Right.
I wonder if that's something that they'll do against the Tennessee Titans if they have Jenkins not at center and they put him more at guard to shore up those spots. But I thought that was an excellent question. I'm not really sure, but like you had mentioned, I think you put your best five out there and maybe they do a swap, but I wonder if that affects Rodgers if you're swapping too many centers out.
Right.
What that does.
Center is something you probably want to keep the most consistent if you can.
That's what I would
think. And if the way I think about it too with the offensive line, obviously the most important position is going to be your left tackle. Mm-hmm. And David Bakhtiari isn't going anywhere. They assured that when they made him the highest paid offensive lineman in the league. So he's going to be your starting left tackle. So I don't think it's, if you take Corey Lindsey out of the equation, the next talented guy that you have is Elgton Jenkins. And the next most important position on the line is center. I know.
Great point.
Some people might think it's right tackle. I think there's a lot more to playing center than there is right tackle. You are the quarterback of the line, right? You're mm-hmm. making all the calls, all the checks, the protections. You need to be aware of what everyone else is doing and making sure everyone has the information they need to be put in the best position to win. And you have to be a very cerebral player. And so I think he is going to be entrenched in that center position for the future. Do I think moving Lucas Patrick around at this point makes sense? No, just because Jenkins he was the first man up when asked mm-hmm. to earlier in the year, and he hasn't shown any signs of any deficiencies so far. So it's just one of those things where maybe going into the offseason, Lucas Patrick was the de facto backup. But I think it's one of those things where injuries happen, and sometimes you lose your job based off the performance of others and people stepping up. So I think Jenkins is there to stay.
Well said. And two things that I want to follow up before we pivot to our next fan question. One is being that I want to re-clarify, by no means am I saying that Elgton Jenkins isn't doing an adequate job. I think that the equation of Lindsey, Jenkins, and Bakhtiari is what's missed.
Right.
I think that's what we're seeing in this offensive line. And two, you've had 2 weeks off, Ken, and you have come in guns a-blazing, my friend. You are on point. It feels really, really good. I almost dropped an obscenity, but it feels really good to be co-hosting with you once again. The soothing, sexy sounds of our producer, Neebles, as well as my co-host, Ken. So I wanted to mention that, Ken. Feels really good to be recording with you and your
Feels good to be back.
And we've got one more fan question, then we'll do some fill in the blanks before we bid adieu for this week's episode. But at Swerve Season, SZN, AJ Dillon has shown some promising things, but is never getting significant touches outside of garbage time. Do you expect him to get real touches if Jamal Williams misses time? And do you think he'll be our number one next year?
Oh, man. I guess I'll start off on this one. I'm president of the AJ Dillon fan club. The fact that Goody drafted him in the second round means that they must really see something in him that is very promising and can be the potential future of the position. Oh, can he come back next year? I'm very doubtful that Aaron Jones comes back. I know there's some drama with him switching agents. He's going to be very expensive, and he should be. He's a talented player. I just don't know if the Packers are going to be in a position to be able to pay him what he's looking for, given all their other constraints that they have. Jamal Williams could maybe be back in the picture next year. Both those guys are free agents, Jamal and Aaron Jones. He could maybe be back. And then, you know, who could be the number one? I don't know. Personally, I'm kind of rooting for AJ Dillon. I love to see him. I put out the tweet. Is it a coincidence that ever since AJ Dillon had his one carry for 18 yards that the offense has completely struggled and haven't been able to do anything? You tell me. That was literally the last big positive explosive play on the offense, and before it became punt, 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 and then a field goal along the way. Yeah, I know Neebles specifically. I saw him on Twitter and some text exchanges, like, you know, why aren't they using him? He had that one run, and he, you know, hadn't used him the rest of the game. And, you know, he's been begging to see some more time. I always want to see some more time. You know, if there are some injuries, I would love to see him come in. You know, I think he's born in to play December running football.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it. I would love to see him get more touches. But again, the problem is he was drafted with two really talented guys in front of him. Aaron Jones is that guy. Jamal Williams is also that guy. And it's hard to, like, where do you take the ball from? Do you give five less carries from Jones and two less from Jamal so that AJ Dillon gets 7 to 10 touches? Like, how can you justify that with all these guys on the roster? It's hard. There's too many mouths to feed. So I think the better part of this question is next year, you know, what, imagine what could happen if he's potentially in a feature back or a, you know, feature backup role in this team. Stay tuned.
He reminds me so much of Dorsey Levens. That run that he pulled off. And then, honestly, he looks like Dorsey Levens. Like, underneath the helmet, there was, like, just a little glimpse where I'm like, oh, man, he moves like Dorsey. He looks like Dorsey a little bit. Gil Martin, sports writer, as part of Cheesehead TV and the Sports Daily, he had said that it reminded him of Earl Campbell, which I thought was a high accolade. Personally, I think I'm all on board with you and Neebles as fan clubs of AJ Dillon. Gutekunst has shown that high draft capital typically does mean that you are getting a prominent role. You also have to realize that he just came back off the reserve COVID-19 list. They might be easing him in. We didn't hear anything about AJ Dillon for 5 weeks. So to see him come back, get some playing time, bust out that big run with some power, with some speed and some vision, it was really exciting to see. I think Aaron Jones is going to get paid next year, and I think that they drafted to pass the baton over to AJ Dillon. The biggest thing I wonder is, does he have any long-term effects from COVID-19? Does that affect his performance? Does that affect his endurance in some shape or form now? And then also next year? I hope not. But I think I foresee AJ Dillon and Jamal Williams as the 1-2 going into next year. I think that's a really great combination. And then they also probably draft another running back as insurance.
Ooh, don't sleep on my boy Patrick Taylor, too.
I know you were going to say Patrick. It's great to see him back, too.
Yeah, he reminds me of a James Starks, the way he moves.
Ah, I like that.
He's a very vertical runner. I know that was kind of the knock on Starks as well, coming in out of the sixth round. But he's got, I think Taylor has a little bit more tricks up his sleeve, a little bit more shift to him. Could be interesting to see what he can do now that he's healthy, right? He's now practicing for the first time since being picked up back in April.
And want to thank our fans for submitting fan questions. This is a quick turnaround with the game on Saturday, recording on Sunday. So we appreciate everyone that submitted questions. We're going to do this week in and week out. And a perfect segue to our fill in the blank question. I have one for you, Ken, and it ties into the talk about A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones, and Jamal Williams. With Aaron Jones, since I did the solo show last week when the news was announced that he had signed with Drew Rosenhaus as his new agent, what contract do you foresee Aaron Jones getting next year?
Oh, man. I haven't, you know, I'll be honest, I haven't put a ton of numbers together for Aaron Jones because I just don't, I don't think it's going to happen.
No, you, with, I know, with him I know. Signing next year.
Oh, I anywhere. Know. I know. And so usually I you know, I play with numbers for guys who I'm like, okay, who, you know, how could they bring, extend Bakhtiari, for instance? How can they extend Clark? And I spent a lot of time and I crunched the numbers. You know, I've kind of put him to the side because I'm like, dude, they drafted A.J. Dillon in the second round. Like, they're not going to pay this guy $10+ million a year. Like, when they can just be like, hey, look, we got your replacement in the second round. So the offer's on the table. Do you want it or not?
That answers my question.
I don't know.
10+.
Well, yeah. I don't think Hilly's going to settle for that. And I think him going with an agent like Drew Rosenhaus kind of tells you everything you need to know about what type of deal he is looking for. He probably wants to get paid. And, you know, he deserves every single penny that the Miami Dolphins or the Jacksonville Jaguars will give him. That's I for some reason, I've got Miami in my mind that that's where he's going to go.
They got the money.
Right.
They both do. Jaguars and Miami.
And, you know, they're a team that historically loves their running backs. And I keep looking at their current cap situation. I'm looking at where they're at for 2021 right now. All in, if they bring back Tonyan and they bring back their exclusive rights guys and they bring back all their practice squad guys who are dirt cheap. Mm-hmm. And they keep money for the draft and for the practice squad and keep $5 million in their back pocket for a rainy day fund, they're $45 million over the cap. They've got to do
nuts.
So much work to get over the cap and then be like, oh, we were also going to pay Aaron Jones, you know, $15 million a year. Like, I don't see it. I don't see it. But
that was my fill in the blank for you.
Yeah. As we get closer to the offseason, post Packers bringing the Lombardi Trophy home. You know, when we transition into the offseason, you know, I'll probably spend a little bit more time kind of crunching some numbers of what maybe he's looking for and
mark your calendars, baby.
See if there's a way that they can squeeze him in, but I'm not seeing it.
Well, we're getting closer to wrapping up 11-3 on tap. You've got two fill in the blank questions for me, and then we'll talk about the Tennessee Titans. But I'm eager what questions you have for me.
I'll do one. I'll see if we got time for two.
Let's do it.
So I've had this one on my list, Bryce, for weeks now. And I asked you offline if you were a fan of the movie Draft Day. And I know that movie gets a little bit of, you know, flack for not being...
I am a fan.
I am too. Mm-hmm. And it, like I said, it gets a little bit of flack for not being realistic. I'm like, if you can watch a movie where a man has superpowers because he got bit by a spider, I think you can enjoy... Yeah. What they're trying to do here. But let's say I've had this and I've been waiting for the time to ask and then I just never came up and then I was gone. I'm like, you know what? I need to
ask.
Rock
and roll, baby.
So I'm going to give you the draft day scenario.
All right.
If someone calls up Brian Gutekunst and gives him the Bo Callahan trade offer, for those of you who have not seen the movie, that is 3 first round draft picks for Aaron Rodgers this offseason, you would blank if you're Goody.
Oh, damn, Ken. I don't really want to foresee that scenario happen, an MVP season with Rodgers. I've got it in my head, my mental bandwidth capacity of him playing this year and next year. I think you have to take that trade if it's three first rounders, especially with Gutekunst and how he approaches draft capital. He gushed about getting that first round draft pick from New Orleans when he traded down. They traded up to get Marcus Davenport, and then the Packers traded up once again with Seattle to take Jair Alexander. The reason why they did that trade was to get a first round draft pick. If they have three first round draft picks, if for some reason a team does have that, I don't see how you could pass that up. That's a lot of cheese. That's such a great question. I think, though, the other side of the coin is that quarterbacks win in this league. You need to have a great quarterback. I think if they come away with the Lombardi and then that happens, then you take a step back when you could be going for back-to-back. I know, right, I'm ahead of myself. So I think realistically, if Rodgers is playing at an MVP level, which he is, they win the Super Bowl, he wants to play again. I think maybe now that I think about it, the scenario is that they let him play for another year in that 2021 season, see if they can go back-to-back. Maybe, just maybe, Rodgers is like, you know what? I'm going to hang up my cleats and walk into the sunset forever.
Well, that's not happening. I don't
maybe, that. Maybe. Don't rain on it, baby. That's how I can sleep at night. That's when the little whimpers happen, when I start thinking about post-Aaron Rodgers life with the Green Bay Packers. Those are the scenarios that pop in my head. But yeah, that's my answer.
All right.
I don't know if I really gave an answer.
You gave a maybe, but maybe not. Depends if they win the Super Bowl. I don't want to touch this question, Ken, because how dare you even suggest it?
No, that was a great question. I think you could look at it two different ways. I think the way the Packers are playing, I think that it's about winning championships. And if you're in that position with Rodgers, there's not going to be any sort of regression. I think you politely decline that, but knowing Gutekunst and how much he covets those first round draft picks, that'd be tough. And I wonder, there's a lot more that goes into that equation.
Oh man, three first rounders is spicy. My opinion is if someone offered him, regardless of how the season ends, you take that and you run.
I can see it. I can
three
totally
first
see
round
it.
Picks for a 37-year-old quarterback who's turned 38. I don't think anyone ever in the right mind offer. I don't think there will be an offer for three first round picks.
But if I like the hypothetical.
I do. You take it and you run and you build around your new quarterback.
I love it.
Hey, I'll keep the other question in my back pocket, Bryce.
Okay.
We'll address them in the future. I've got a list. I got a list of them and I can't wait to get through them with you.
I love it. And we get a little bit of diversity within our episodes. We talked vibes. We talked game balls. We did fan questions. We did a couple fill in the blanks. I was not expecting that fill in the blank. And when I get done recording, I'm going to wander aimlessly in my neighborhood pondering post Aaron Rodgers life. But in the meantime, Aaron Rodgers, 40 touchdowns on his MVP campaign tour right now. Packers are 11-3. They face the Tennessee Titans this upcoming week, and the playoffs are starting. Packers are 2 wins away from securing the NFC number 1 seed, a first round bye, and home field throughout. But I like how you mentioned that the Packers won and they were disappointed. And I, after the game, listening to the post game presser from Rodgers and LaFleur, I felt the same way, like, wow, like this feels like a loss. And they won. And so I feel pretty good. I like this hiccup, if you will. I think this gives them an opportunity to pause, stay in the moment, reflect. And I think personally that they're going to have a great week of practice and come ready to play the Tennessee Titans, which we'll see what they can do. The defense is bending in the right way, but Derrick Henry, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown, Ryan Tannehill, this is a high-octane offense. I think this will be a great test for this Packers defense and also a great opportunity for this Packers offense to bounce back, see what they can do with that offensive line. If it was just an anomaly, for some reason, I felt like it was like the Buccaneers game. Like we won, but afterwards, so, you know, that anomaly feeling of like, huh, like I really wonder what happened. But week in, week out, that's what the NFL is like. It's a week to week. I feel pretty good, though, even though it was a Jekyll and Hyde performance. And I think that they've got enough on tape that they can reflect, almost have a chip on their shoulder, And for some reason, I'm expecting a blowout. I don't know. I think the Packers come out hungry, a little ticked off that, you know, now the 4-10 Panthers kind of gave them a roller coaster through four quarters. I think that they're going to come out, and my hope is that they have their best performance to date. Four quarters of football is what Aaron Rodgers wants, Coach LaFleur wants. That's what I want as well.
Oh, wow. You know, this is the second, you know, we talked about this question when there were four games left in the season, who are going to be the toughest opponents. And this is the one I circled as the second toughest. I had the Lions is the one that I thought was going to give us the most trouble. Tannehill's a guy who does not, he's not reckless with the ball. He doesn't turn it over, makes smart decisions. And you got Derrick Henry, who will be running over potential cornerbacks and defensive backs for the Green Bay Packers. He had just another just wicked stiff arm today, just embarrassing these small guys on the outside. It could be a test. I think the Packers come away with a win. If things shake out the way that it does within the standings, this game could actually not matter because it's an AFC opponent. And if they take care of the NFC opponents, and if by the time this is released, if who knows, we don't know the outcome of the Saints-Chiefs game. But if the if the Saints fall to the Chiefs, then this game doesn't matter. But they all matter. I want the win. I think they can get the win. But I think it can be one of those games where, you know, you're expecting a blowout. I'm expecting it to be close. I think their offense can stick around. Maybe kind of like what the Vikings game was, the one where we lost at home, where the Packers punch, get a touchdown, Vikings come back with the touchdowns. Packers go in the end zone, Vikings come back, right? They can trade punches, I think, with this team. And so the offense needs to figure it out. They can't have another game like they just did where they scored early and then just kind of decided to pack it in and not really show up in the second half.
No, I completely agree. And this is also Coach LaFleur's old team. He was offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. So
revenge game.
A little nostalgia with those two, with Vrabel and LaFleur. But when I mean blowout, I think this offense gets back to scoring 30 plus. The defense will be a big test. I think this will be a great litmus test for this defense against Derrick Henry. He's capable of popping off for 200 in a blink of an eye. I think if the defense can handle him, it will bode well for them. Special teams has been trending in the better direction, and Mason Crosby with that golden DOS boot just continues to just be fierce. But your Packers are 11-3, still sit atop of the NFC and are back-to-back NFC North champions. It felt so good to record with my brother from another mother, Big Bad Ken Ingles. Hope you all enjoyed this episode, and stay tuned for our other episodes week in and week out. I'm Bryce Christensen.
And I'm Ken Ingles.
And this is the Unknown Packers Podcast. Thank you so much for following the Unknown Packers Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Unknown Packers, as well as Facebook, Instagram, the Unknown Packers Podcast. You can check us out on our website, theunknownpackers.com, and a variety of different podcast platforms as well. You can also say, hey, Alexa, play the Unknown Packers Podcast. That's right. We're friends with Alexa. Go Pack Go.
This podcast was edited and produced by Sonic Transformation. Sonic Transformation, your sound refined.